Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Friday, March 18th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? That chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships and to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it, and use it as often as you'd like, absolutely free. You can also download a whole host of audio files or shows just like this one, in which people have called in and either been stepped through the worksheet process or been move to call in and give powerful testimonials about how the use of that tool has improved their life and relationships. That's not all. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. And if you tap on that, it will give you access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do that soon and often, because once they do, it frequently leads to comments, questions, answers, testimonials. And if you have any of those you'd like to share with us and you're on the call live, give us a call at 563-999-3581 and press the 1 on your phone and it will put a little icon of a hand by your phone number and I'll announce you by your area code and turn on your microphone. If you're not listening live, if you're listening to this through the archives and you have a question, a comment, or an answer, or a refutation you would like to pose to what we're teaching or discussing or observing, you may email us, tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, or you can email Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org, W-H-Y-A-G-A-I-N.org. So, the other thing that we've been doing this year since January 10th is working through the book, The Way of Mastery, which I come to view as a set of tools. And we've been working our way through it quite slowly and methodically to some, in some respects. I suppose it's nowhere near as slowly as I went through it when I was first introduced to this work, when I would spend months on each individual lesson, reading and rereading and recording and then listening to the recordings of myself reading it as I drove around. And I suppose that needed to happen at that time because this was such a challenge to my intellectual mind, to my conscious logical mind, to my egoic mind. And there were so many things in this work that seemed like self-contained contradictions. In the Eastern work, they would call it a koan. This is a statement or a phrase that seemingly contradicts itself and doesn't make any sense. And the conscious logical mind wrestles with it. And over time, either because the conscious logical mind gets exhausted and burned out and quits trying to make sense of it, or because there's another mechanism in place, insight occurs, growth occurs, spiritual learnings erupt or evolve when people use a tool like a koan. What's a koan? A koan is a statement that seems to contradict itself. We ran into one of those in the second lesson in The Way of Mastery, where it says, mastery arises from innocence. And in the Western culture, that's the opposite of what is taught. Mastery arrives from, full-on, all-out application of willpower and determination and refusing to settle for anything but absolute winning and domination. And here's a koan, here's a statement, here's a heading in our second lesson that says, mastery arises from innocence. And in the first lesson, it says, the way of the heart, which is the title of this first book, there are three books contained in this big blue book called The Way of Mastery. And in that first lesson, in the fifth page, it says, the way of the heart is not about the intellect. You can't be in this path. You can't learn, gain, experience what's being offered in this work if you're stuck thinking your intellect is your God, and that the only way to get whatever you might get out of this work is to reason it through and rationalize it. That doesn't work. We have to have a different level of accessing what life experience can reveal to us than the conscious logical mind will provide. I remember in one of our little sidebars as I was reading through the first five lessons, I remembered the book by someone whose name will come to me, but the book title is Lizards Eat Butterflies. And in that book, the title is intended to... it's a reference to the idea that so many people use the metaphor of the butterfly for the human being evolving and growing and transforming and becoming more than we were in the beginning. And he keeps talking about how if you understood the gluttony of the caterpillar, if you understood the extremely inefficient nature of the caterpillar and what it goes through and how much food it consumes ravenously as a caterpillar, before it goes into its cocoon and emerges as a moth or a butterfly. You wouldn't be so happy to use that metaphor for yourself. There's a lot of waste and inefficiency that goes on there. He says, but lizards, on the other hand, they start out as lizards and they remain lizards. But as they grow, they get too big for their skin and they shed their skin. And he says, this is a better metaphor for us as people. We are, Way of Mastery constantly says, you remain as you were created to be. And so he says in this book, Lizards Eat Butterflies, the lizard is a better metaphor for us human beings, and we begin and end as miracles of life, and we can grow into an awareness of who we are and what our capabilities are without having to make these radical transformations that would make us unrecognizable to our former self. He also mentions in that book that it's really curious that our physiologists, our medical doctors, and those who study our anatomy tell us we have 12 cranial nerves, and we have 5 cranial nerves, and there's a cranial nerve that corresponds to each of the 5 senses: sight, sound, smell, taste, touch. And if there's a cranial nerve for each of those 5 senses, and we have 12 cranial nerves, what might there be that we can learn to experience or sense in a different way that goes beyond anything we've experienced before? What might we be capable of developing in our awareness that our physiology is already programmed to allow us to experience? It's a curious thought, but it takes us into the realm of the open heart. It takes us into the realm of awareness and consciousness outside of the conscious logical and outside of what the raw, the gross, the really obvious information that comes into our 5 physical senses. It takes us beyond that into something much more subtle and gentle, and something much more ephemeral, some might say. And so the idea is, what if we were designed to have experiences that can easily be registered by our bodies, by the physiology, but they're just not as raw, they're not as powerful, they're not as physically felt directly as our 5 senses, but they're very real. And that, what if eventually we will move into the level where we can measure these things with our so-called scientific devices? Just like, you know, there was a time in human history where humans could not be aware of or measure ultraviolet light or infrared light or radio waves or X-rays. But eventually, over time, we've developed these tools, these machines, these computers and scanning devices and measurement devices that have allowed us to see other levels of energy which have always been there. Well, that's essentially what the Way of Mastery is calling us to. Without external devices and machines and computers and scanners and measuring tools, the Way of Mastery is calling us to put aside our reliance upon and or our deification of making a god of our intellect and settling back into a more full embodied a more full energetic experience of our lives. And the connection of ourselves to everything in the world and to energies which are in us and connect us always that we don't usually slow down and tune into. And so right there in the first lesson, it says, look, the way of the heart, the pathway that we're trying to describe in these first 12 lessons requires us to put our intellect aside like a tool that's there for use when it's needed, like the carpenter who puts the hammer away when it's time to do some fine woodworking or some sanding or some measuring. The hammer isn't the only tool that the master carpenter uses by any means. And yet, we have been programmed to believe that our intellect is our only tool and our only valuable tool. We have been, in the Western world anyway, we have been conditioned to believe that people that talk about or rely on these other senses, these energies, these intuitions, these creativities are woo-woo or wacko. So what if that's not really the case? What if there's a level of existence, a way to abide in the physical, mental, emotional, energetic realm, which tunes into things beyond the gross, the heavy, the exclusively physical, solid senses, and tap into some of the other energies that are there all the time? What if there's a way to be mindfully awake and aware in each new present moment that doesn't rely on the logical mind and judgment and comparison and competition? What if there's an entire level of life experience that I can step into when I move into allowance and surrender and acceptance and questioning and moving with the flow of life? What if there's much more I can do in and with a situation when I accept it as it is and I begin there and I add my energy and I'm very conscious about whatever energy I might add to a situation? And so that instead of constantly having old reaction patterns triggered in me and living from that negative, constricted, judgmental, reflexive pattern of behavior, what if I take a breath every time I notice that tightness and tension? Hold it a little at the top of the breath for 2 or 3 seconds and slowly exhale and send the signal to my physical energy system, Tim, you're safe. There's no fight or flight response needed here. There's no judgment needed here. Because all judgment is going to do, Tim, is narrow your vision so that you can't see the big picture. Tim, you just got triggered. You've got an old pattern running. Tim, you just had a negative thought or an emotion come up in your mind, and so you can instantly know 3 things. Number one, it's a lie or based in a falsehood or a distortion. Number two, it's an old tape playing. Because, Tim, in the present moment, you're perfectly safe. You're this essence of creation expressing in form. You're the essence of consciousness. That's your true nature. You're completely safe. And number three, Tim, if you act from this negative thought or negative emotion and the energy that's tight and tense and judgmental within you, you're just going to make your current situation worse. You're going to be pouring your emotional gasoline on this emotional fire that you or somebody else is experiencing in the moment. So if you soften and breathe in that moment and move into questioning and allowance and surrender, of possibilities opens. And Tim, you want more possibilities. You want newness. You had a number of experiences in your life that you didn't like. There was sadness, there was grief, there was struggle, there was turmoil. And what you'd like to do is move more into the flow of life and experience this thing that people call bliss or gratitude or appreciation or connection or love. We have this word love, capital L, love. The energy of yourself that's driving you, that created you, that's keeping your body together. You want to be consciously aware of that and start extending that to everyone and everything and every interaction. And Tim, whenever you're tight or tense or angry or scared or hurt or frustrated or feel grief or guilt or shame or judgment of yourself or somebody else, you can't consciously extend that energy that you say you know you're made of and that you want to experience more and more. So what we're being called to is a practice of mindfulness, a practice of awareness, a practice of consciously connecting with ourselves and everyone and everything around us more and more frequently throughout our day. And the first part of being able to see that more accurately in this work is to recognize that we are the ones creating our experience of life in each moment. We create the filters that we use to look at life, to interpret life, and to choose a judgment about life and then a response to life. We're the ones that create that filter. We're the ones that create the emotions we experience when we go into tightness or tension. And we have choice. That's the whole first two lessons in The Way of the Heart are about awakening to the fact that I am creating my own experience of life in each moment and that I need do nothing. And that the fact that I have choice, you know, a lot of the ancient religions would talk about, you know, God gave you free will. That's choice. I can choose to go into tension and judgment. Or I can choose to go into allowance and surrender. I can choose to interpret this person attacking me is a real danger to me, and I need to either run away from them or attack them or bribe them or seduce them to get them to change so I don't have to feel threatened. Or I could choose to see anything that's coming out of them that might be an attack, that might be from the negative thoughts or emotions, is a reflection of the fact that they're in pain or fear or sadness, and they don't know how to deal with that within themselves, and they don't know how to get what they want out of life in complete harmony with the flow of life. So they've either temporarily forgotten or yet to discover their brilliance, and they're just another being of brilliance and light. They're just another spark of the one mind, the creative flow. I could choose that interpretation. And my personal experience has been the more I choose an interpretation like that, the better my life gets. And the better the situations that I'm in unfold in favorable ways, in ways that I would prefer. It certainly isn't a magical cure for all pain and fear and sadness and struggle in my life, but it is nearly magical in the ability to transform my experience of life when I choose a neutral or positive interpretation. And it's been works like these, The Course in Miracles and The Way of Mastery, that introduce me to this observation that I do have the faculty of choice. And that in each new present moment, I can choose to be awake and aware in the moment. I think it's Richard Moss who has this mandala he has, and he puts it on the floor, and he says, here in the center, that's the present moment. And across the circle from me is the other person, and on this side is me, and on the left side is the past, and on the right side is the future. And he says, now, step into each of these filters to look at what's going on in the moment. and get really clear about what I'm creating as my own experience of life, when I look at this as though this, in this moment I'm feeling a good feeling and I look across and I say, oh, this other person has created this good feeling in me. Or I have a negative feeling and I look across the circle and I say, oh, this other person has created this negative feeling in me. Or I look at it from a past perspective and say, oh, it's this problem, this trauma that happened in my past that's creating this negative feeling in me. Or I look to the future and I say, oh, I'm only feeling this negative feeling because something bad is coming. And I get very, very clear about the filter and the thoughts I'm using to interpret this moment that I'm experiencing. And then I step into the present moment and start questioning directly, active, open questioning. And I realize in this present moment, there is no fear. There is no anger. There is no hurt. There is no threat. And the more I step into that level of observation, as the Way of Mastery is asking me to, and providing some tools for me to practice that, the more I directly observe my effect, the effect of my direction of my consciousness and my choice of interpretation of life events, and how that is the mechanism that creates my experience of life. And then the third lesson comes along and says, you know, these first two lessons are just cracking the door to a new dimension of experience. Let's apply that now to how I have dramatically, powerfully created my experience of each and every person I've ever interacted with. How in the moment when I forget that I'm creating my experience of life, my mind instantly, because there's this physical level of brain functioning, what Guy Finley calls the mechanical level of mind, it instantly kicks in and shows me pictures of how other people are creating my pain or fear or sadness. The moment I forget that I'm the one creating my pain or fear or sadness, that I'm the one generating a negative emotional state, instantaneously, within the space of a heartbeat, my brain shows me a picture of how somebody else or something else is creating my upset. And it's in that denial of my ability and the process of how I create my experience of life, and then the instantaneous projection of that dynamic into an image of how somebody else is doing it in my mind. That's what has created, colored, and distorted every relationship I've ever had. Whether I created the belief that I'm only happy when I'm with this person because he or she is so magnificent, and it's because they do this or that that I feel loved and I feel safe and I feel smart and I feel sexy and I feel attractive and valuable, or it's because of a negative thought and I believe it's because of this person that I have anger or fear or sadness or self-loathing. All of it is self-created. And this is an observation that we are being called to make and practice so that it becomes first nature. Right? It might start as second nature, but eventually we want this practice of observing actively in each new present moment. We want it to be first nature. We want to practice it until it becomes a habit and then strengthen that habit until it becomes our default setting. I and I alone create my experience of life. This is right there in the first two lessons. And then the third lesson says, not only that, but I have created every perception I've experienced about the people around me. And it's happened within a heartbeat, faster than my conscious logical mind can keep up with, as an automatic consequence of me forgetting the first axiom, which is that I'm the one creating my experience. Well, I can't interrupt a process that happens faster than my conscious logical mind can track it once it's begun. So I need to do this groundwork. I need to do this level of observation, reading and rereading, questioning and deprogramming my mind, because I was raised in this culture that for the whole entire first 45 years of my life, including my doctorate training, I was trained, you made me angry, you hurt my feelings, you light my life, you know, you light up my life, without you I'm nothing, because of you I'm a failure, etc. All of the blame directed outward. All of the accounting, all of the attribution, I attribute my happiness or my sadness or my anger or my fear to life situations or the people around me for the whole entire first 45 years of my life. And so I'm still in that process of catching, breathing, softening, and noticing the negative interpretations that get generated in a heartbeat because of my conditioning, and actively working to choose again, to choose something else. And then the Way of Mastery says, look, all events are neutral, and you need do nothing. If you did need to do something, that would mean you aren't free to choose. So soften, breathe, choose again. Demonstrate to yourself your ability to choose. Question whether or not you have the ability to choose. Question, is there another way to look at these things? Question asking something that's from a higher, more integrated, more holistic perspective to be your guidance. Every time you have an upset, turn the focus inside and do this proactive, prophylactic work within your mindset, within your conditioning. Because once that mechanism kicks in, it happens too quickly for your conscious logical mind to dismantle, to even follow or dismantle. That's why Guy Finley says, we must actively steal from ourselves every excuse, every level of rationalization and excuse to be negative. Way of Mastery says there in the third lesson, it doesn't mean you won't have anger, but quit justifying it. There's no justification for the anger response directed outwardly or even inwardly. It's a misapplication of our mind energy. So Guy Finley notices and says, look, this is a mechanical level of mind. It's just going to churn and do what it does. We have to get in there with that awareness, that observer, that higher S self, that ability to step back from that process of thought and observe it from the bird's eye view. We've got to step in there and steal from ourselves, dismantle every excuse to be negative. Bitter, hurtful, resentful, depressed, angry. And he goes on to say, because if we don't, that automatic, that mechanical level of mind, that process, will be able to rationalize any level of abuse towards ourselves or anyone else. And most of us raised in this culture, the way we've been raised in this culture, have been trained to be severely abusive, whether it's severely abusive to others or ourselves. You know, most of us who end up on a path like this where they're listening to Mind Shifters Radio or reading The Course in Miracles or The Way of Mastery, most of us are far more conditioned to beat up on ourselves and to be hard on ourselves than we are to be hard on other people. But abuse is abuse, whether I'm directing it toward myself or I'm directing it towards anybody else. Rationalizing that abuse is the same trap. None of that will get me where I say I want to go. None of that is true with a capital T. So the first three lessons in the Way of Mastery are bringing us to this awareness that we're creating our experience and our awareness that we have the freedom of choice. and that we need do nothing, and our awareness that can grow through this power of observation that we are the ones who have created every negative impression that we've ever experienced about another person. And most of us have no concept of what another person is actually about, what their true nature is, what their strengths and weaknesses and blessings and characteristics are, because we aren't really having a relationship with the other person. We're having a relationship with the perceptions and the fantasies in our mind about that person. She has no right to question me about that. He has no right to talk to me that way. This is a typical male, you know, mansplaining situation, and this is, and we aren't really aware that in that instant where we get tension within us, in the instant where we have judgment and resistance, we have lost our ability in that moment to perceive accurately. We're not seeing the truth of life, capital T, truth of life. We're not seeing ourselves accurately, and we're not seeing the people around us accurately. Our vision has collapsed into this microscopic, myopic view. It's a pinpoint, and we're trying to analyze the universe. It's like trying to, you know, figure out what the ocean is really like by taking a thimble full of water from the ocean and doing an analysis on it. It's absurd. And what this work is calling us to understand is that in each new present moment, in the instant that we have a tightness or a tension or a judgment or a constriction, we have literally pulled ourselves out of the flow of life. We literally have no ability to see life accurately. And we are creating the perception that we're experiencing, and we're creating all of the negative emotional states that we're experiencing, and there is no other cause. And until we wake up and step into that observation and we develop this habit, this you know, proactive, prophylactic measure of watching for our own judgment, tension, constriction, and catching it in the first moments and releasing it, until we step into that, we will not begin to see life in its fullness. We won't be able to see it accurately, and we won't be able to move ourselves closer to where we say we want to be, which is, for some it's enlightenment, for some it is bliss, for some it is connection with their source, whatever you want to call it. The words are not the thing. So then the fourth lesson comes along and says, well, you know, like Guy Finley says, the Creator put you in a world, not this world where if you search and grovel and hike the mountains of the Himalayas and explore every cave, that if you're lucky, you might find a master, a guru, a guide who can teach you. Guy Finley says, that's not what the Creator did. The Creator put you in a world where your instant, constant connection to the forces that can teach you will never abandon you if you just ask to be shown. Now, that's from a Guy Finley lecture. I'm not sure Guy Finley even knows what The Way of Mastery is as a book. If I had to bet, I'd say he never read it. But then we get to lesson four, and lesson four in The Way of Mastery says, hey, here is this flow of creative energy that's trying to move through you. It's the energy that gave you existence to begin with. It's what you're created of. It's what everything around you is created of. It's this movement of life and creative force. And we're going to call it desire for the purposes of this book. And it's always there in everyone and everything. It's the energy of creation expanding itself. And you could learn, if you choose, to tune into it and use it as part of the information system that guides your choices through life. And Way of Mastery is highly recommending that, because it's this infallible guidance system that is completely aside from your intellect. It's that instant, constant guidance that Guy Finley was referring to by another name, but it's the same thing. Most higher level spiritual teachings say the same thing. You have a connection to your source. You can't ever be separate from your source. Ask and it is given. Knock and it shall be opened. All of these spiritual teachings say the same thing. Get out of your conscious logical mind and your intellect and tune into some of these more subtle energies, which are much more powerful than anything your conscious logical mind can ever conceive of, much less initiate and regulate. So trust this flow of life and learn to ask. Move into questioning. Move into allowance. Ask, what is it I desire? Ask, why am I here? Ask, how can I be a blessing to myself and others in this moment? Ask, what is it that I can't see with my five senses that might be the brightest light to guide me through this moment that seems, when I'm evaluating things from my intellect and my judgment and my five senses, it seems to be a horrible situation. But if all of these spiritual teachings are true, this is the flow of life here, and it's possible for me to experience it differently, so let me ask how might I experience this differently. How might I get aligned with the flow of life? How might I express what creation wants to express through me and be that conduit for a healing, expanding, loving, gratitude-based, appreciation-based energy in this moment? So that's what Lesson 4 directs us to and says, hey, look, it's right there in you, in your essence, in the life force that's flowing through you. You're being lived. You're not living a life. You're being breathed. You're not breathing. Something is seeing through you. It's not you doing this seeing. You have the capacity to slow down and put the conscious logical mind and the physical senses aside a little bit and step back into that observer witness position, as they call it in this work, and ask, learning to live, practicing the art of living in the question. As Rilke would say, living in the question without demanding the answer. Because in that moment, when you ask a good question, the part of your mind that can ask a good question doesn't have the capacity to comprehend the answer. Because any really good question is going to demand growth and expansion of the evaluating device that's asking the question. The questions produce results. A really good question produces really good results. A really limiting question, a really ambiguous question produces ambiguous results. A really myopic or limiting question produces limiting results. So as we learn to live in the question and we ask what wants to express through me in this moment and how can I be a blessing, and we develop that into a habit and a pattern, then along comes Lesson 5 and says, okay, let's help you have a template for this. Let's give your conscious logical mind a little something so that you can keep it busy over here at the kiddie table, like with Oreo cookies and milk, playing with the five keys to the kingdom. Not putting your nose to the grindstone and making sure that you never deviate from this, but just setting this out as an intention and then using your attention moment to moment to notice when you drift away from it and then gently returning to it. It's like the most powerful and effective meditation that I ever learned. I spent 5 or more years reading everything I could about how to meditate, and every technique was mind-based. Stare at the flame and push away all thoughts except the flame. Walk into the cave and see nothing but blackness, and then a black pit, you know, in front of you, and all of your problems are on the other side, 30 feet away in a black pit. And go in the movie theater in your mind and imagine this white screen, completely white with no thoughts on it, and make sure there's no thoughts and you're controlling your thoughts. Every exercise that I tried for meditation failed miserably. I got frustrated. I got more tight and tense. I got more judgment of myself because I kept having all these thoughts and distractions. And then finally, I read this book by Ram Dass. I think the book was Grist for the Mill. But I read this book, and in it he suggested a meditation experience where you judge yourself as being successful at meditating if you simply spend 20 minutes sitting in a comfortable chair or lying on the floor and doing these three things. Whatever thoughts come into your mind are perfectly okay. You make an agreement with yourself before you start that exercise. You're just going to allow and watch your thoughts. And for the next 20 minutes or half hour, however long you're going to meditate, you refuse to pour any negative emotional energy into any thought that arises. And you make an appointment with yourself for 2 hours later that if something comes up that you really need to feel angry or bitter or resentful or hurtful about, you'll do that at 4 o'clock. But here it is, 2 o'clock, and you're going to spend half an hour meditating. And so you make the agreement with yourself that any thought is going to be allowed. It's going to be acceptable. It's going to be perfectly okay. And you're just going to watch it come into your mind, and then watch it float away, and then turn your attention to see what thought might come next. And if the same thought keeps coming back for 20 minutes, that's fine. It's perfectly okay. It's in allowance. It's in acceptance. It's in surrender. And the other things you do are you scan your body from time to time. You do a mental inventory of any tightness or tension or heat or cool or loss of sensation or numbness or tingling. You just scan your body from the top of your head down to your feet whenever you think about it in the 20 minutes. And then the third thing, and you just gently shift your attention from these three things, watching your thoughts, doing the body inventory scanning. And the third thing is you just watch your breath. You're not controlling your breath. You're not trying to breathe in a certain pattern. You're just noticing what breath rhythm your body is choosing. Is it deep and slow? Is it shallow and rapid? Is it deep and rapid? What? You just notice it. And you notice your breathing for a while, and then you shift over to noticing your body sensations, and then you shift over to noticing what thoughts. And then after, you know, 2 or 3 or 5 or 12, it may seem like an hour's worth of watching thoughts and getting hooked in them, you go, oh, I'm thinking about this again. Oh, that's interesting. Let that float away and see what comes next. So I'm in the allowance phase. And I trained myself in the first time I did that exercise. The biggest thing I did was I trained myself to quit beating myself up for not reaching some goal. And I got more deeply relaxed in that first 20, 25-minute exercise than I had in 5 years of trying all of these mental games and controlling thoughts. And so the Way of Mastery says, let's have you come over here into lesson 5 and take that kind of an approach, right? Make the agreement with yourself that you're not going to spend any considerable amount of time beating yourself up if you don't follow these exercises. You're just going to notice with childlike curiosity and playfulness, oh, I got distracted and I spent 3 days and I didn't do my Way of Mastery suggested exercises. Well, that's interesting. I wonder what might happen if I go back to those. I wonder what might happen if I just ask myself right now, do I desire, is there any impulse in me to go back to those exercises? Maybe yes, maybe no. And then here's a template I can use with that same gentleness, with that same openness and flow perspective. Lesson 5 says there are 5 keys to the kingdom. The first one is this energy of creation that wants to express uniquely through you in each new present moment. We're just going to shortcut that and call it desire. And becoming aware that that's there, that's a part of your guidance system that will never abandon you if you just ask. So, desire. Ask to be shown. What do I truly desire in this moment? How is it I might be a blessing to myself or others in this moment? The second key is intention. Not, I'm never going to deviate from this, just I'm going to, as I get the impulse to do so, keep bringing my attention in the moment back to aligning with desire. And the more I do that, the more this tends to build in itself and strengthen. It's like this tapestry that's getting woven within me, within my power of will, within my thoughts, within my life experience. And so I'm going to ask, what is mine to do here? What wants to express through me in this moment? How can I be a blessing to myself and others? As often as I can train myself to do it with gentleness and playfulness and joy and dancing and singing, lightness without letting seriousness enter the mind. I recognize that judgment is poison. I recognize that judgment is the opposite of the process of dismantling false perceptions, that solidifies false perceptions. I recognize that judgment takes me to the opposite side of the universe from where I want to be. And I just recognize when it happens and I chuckle and I say, oh, look at that. I've created the experience of being far, far away from where I want to be. Oh, in the next moment, I might create the opposite experience, being right where I want to be, being right with all of my teachers, being in alignment with the flow of life. And the third key to the kingdom is allowance. And allowance is this willingness to scan my consciousness and my body for the earliest warning signs that I'm jumping to a negative conclusion or a judgment, or there's a tightness or constriction with me, and just notice it and breathe into it and say, oh, this won't get me where I want to go, so I'll just slow down and notice that I'm doing that and just gently release that tightness, that tension, that identification. And I move into allowance. I move into observation of the flow of life in the moment. And then the next key to the kingdom is surrender. And in that, I give up all this restlessness. I give up all of this trying to force things to be different than they are. I give up the sense that I'm the maker and the doer. I recognize that every time I think, I'm the great and powerful Dr. Hayes, pay no attention to that man behind the curtain, that it's a joke. It's a fantasy. I didn't create myself. I don't know when I was created. This is happening in, through, as, and around me. And I can be a joyful observer, like an audience member at a symphony. I can just sit here and soak it up and continue to ask what's mine to do, continue to be scanning for tightness or tension or judgment as it arises, and release the energy, the mind energy I might pour into that I have been conditioned to pour into that. And I can allow the flow of life in, through, as, and around me, and appreciate it and participate it, surrender into it, and continually ask to be shown, what might this be for? How might this lead to blessings and lessons that I could never have imagined? And once I do that, this course tells me, my life experience will start skyrocketing to something that I highly prefer to all of the tension and judgment and bitterness that I had been experiencing in my life prior to this. And as that happens, the old ego stuff is going to kick in and have this strong tendency to want to take credit for it. What a fine boy am I. Look at what I've manifested. Let me go on the internet show and let other people pat me on the back for what a great job I'm doing at manifesting the love of my life and enough money to pay my bills and, you know, the recognition as this great spiritual teacher. And the temptation is going to grow for me to take credit for my life the better it gets. And that's a trap. Not just on Tuesdays, not just on Thursdays, not just, you know, every full moon, every time my mind wants to take credit for whatever's good in my life or my existence, that's a trap. And the key to getting out of that, to making sure that I don't let that trap destroy the progress I've already made and my movement forward in connection with life and love, the key to protecting against that trap, humility. Being able to look for and see the highest and best in another, including myself, and choosing to cooperate only with that, because I know I didn't create myself and I didn't create the world around me. I don't even know when I was created. I don't know what I'm here for. I can create a belief. There's a suggestion. Let's create the belief in this mind shifter's in this master way of mastery. Let's create the belief that I'm here to extend love. I'm here to extend the energy of creation in each new present moment. I'm here to bless all creation. I can create that belief that, again, those are just thoughts and some mind energy directed, but they're directed in a kind of a loving way. So that's all right. I'll experiment with that for a while and see how that works. I'll choose to question from that space of, in Lesson 5, it actually comes down to the phrase, from divine ignorance. I'm going to recognize at deeper and deeper levels how little I truly know about life, about myself, about the complexities of the world, about energies that my senses can't perceive. I'm going to come at life from that divine ignorance and ask to be shown. And then I'm going to be protected from, you know, most of the negative effects of egoic thinking and the conditioning of my culture. So that's what these tools, this practice, is suggesting that we might try to do. And it is a constant vigilance that gets the best results in this work. And any slip-up of judging myself and beating myself up and wishing I could do better is a trap, because you're okay just the way you are. The world is okay just the way it is. You are a part of that flow of life just the way you are. Your value is untouched and internal. None of your successes or failures in any area have ever increased or decreased your value as a person. That's one of the tools I used to give people way back in therapy, long before I met the Dr. Michael Rice tools. It comes from that poem by Rudyard Kipling, If you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two imposters just the same, my successes and failures in any area do not increase or decrease my value as a person. So that brings us to the end of our hour. That's our summary of our first five lessons, or yet another summary of the first five lessons. And we'll be back again on Monday for another week. Thank you all for being here. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love. And everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. I hope you have a good weekend.
Thanks. You too. Blessings.
Thank you. Okay. Bye. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Friday, March the 18th, 2022. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions, because that makes this your show. While we're waiting on Michael to get dialed in, I'll just say, you know, we had postponed the Mind Shifters for March instead of last Saturday because several people couldn't join, that we're going to be doing that this Sunday. the 20th, and it is at 10 o'clock Eastern Time. And we're going to be discussing, when everybody gets online, if everybody's okay or not for moving the time. It makes it a little challenging for Roma in Hawaii because they don't do the time change. And so instead of getting up at 5 in the morning, she's up at 4 in the morning. So this coming Sunday, the 20th, it will still be at the regular 10 o'clock Eastern time because we haven't heard back from all the participants. But then once everybody's there, then we will make the decision of whether to change the time or not. So if you are part of the Mind Shifters Still Point Breathing membership, it will be this coming Sunday, day after tomorrow, at 10 o'clock Eastern time. And then we'll follow it on Tuesday, the 22nd, with the support group meeting. So if you want to join us, you know, you can join for 1 month at a time or 3 months or for the whole year. And those who do the expanded memberships, you know, the first month you get the three-section mind shifter list that's on the website. But then for every month that you're in the group after that, you get an extended with another additional section of 13 more mind shifters. So we're up now, I think, our eighth new listing has gone out. So check your emails if you're part of that group and you haven't got it. Check your email because I did send them out last week. And welcome, Michael.
And welcome, everybody. We got the blessing of surprise. We get to have Arya Rain again today, so she's with us. We've been sitting reading books, and she's been making tea for us and sandwiches and all kinds of neat things. So it's been a very sweet morning. And before I start into a topic, I just wanted to check and see if we have any hands up. We had quite a bit of conversation going on yesterday, some really great ideas. And so wondering if there's anything to cover from yesterday's show before I move on to another topic. Anybody out there with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room, sweetie?
No, it is all quiet on the home front.
Okay. Well, I'd like to talk a little bit about the whole idea of relationships. There's actually a Facebook group that I've been invited to do some interacting with. So I've been doing a little bit of looking at the revisiting the healing through relationships topic that we teach, which is either a 2-hour video or a 4-hour audio series. Actually, we still have it. See, I think that series is probably about 30 years ago that I did it, and we've gotten so much positive feedback on that audio track that we've not changed it in 30 years. The video we've redone a couple of times to newer versions of the workshop, but the actually two of them, why is this happening to me again, and healing through relationships are still the original versions on the 4-hour audio track. So if you're interested in tapping into that, you can go to our website, whyagain.org, and there's a link there that says products, and you can take a look at what we have. We have those on CD and the audio track, as well as a download for streaming, permanent access to download. And there's we have DVDs, hard copies, and
Michael, the audios are not on streaming.
They're not streaming yet. Oh, that's just the videos.
No,
okay.
I have to turn them into a video to load them to Vimeo. And I just haven't had time to do a 4-hour conversion.
Yeah, so. Yeah, it's a big one. Cool. All right. Well, anyway, they're out there, but I want to talk about, and you know, the title of that workshop, when I originally taught it, was Healing Your Relationships, because like most of the world, I believe that there were diseased relationships and that those relationships needed to be healed. Well, it was probably a year or two teaching that before I discovered that, no, there are no diseased relationships. Every relationship is a perfect reflection, a perfect creation that gives us the chance to look at and heal ourselves. So it's through our relationship interactions that we get to heal. So my offering is that the underlying purpose of relationship is to show us what we don't want to face in ourselves and to support us in being freed from all of that conflict and pain. So that's the real underlying purpose of relationship, at least at this stage of our existence. Now, many use the shine of a new relationship for exactly the opposite purpose and end up jumping into relationships in an attempt to escape accountability for their own internal dynamic. So there's this wonderful, exciting feeling until the honeymoon is over, and that shine becomes a distraction. Oh, I don't have to feel. I don't have to deal with what's going on inside of me because, look, I have this shiny new thing to play with. So without understanding that there's a higher purpose for relationship, many use their interactions to retreat from life issues that they brought into the relationship. And as a result, there's misunderstanding and confusion. When relationships are used to keep unresolved pain at bay, the excitement generated between partners and lovers begins to wane. It's not required to happen. There's a reason why that wanes. It wanes because the unresolved energetic patterns obviously come into play and cover up that shininess and that aliveness that comes with true relationship, or that comes in the beginning phases of relationships. That never wanes unless there are unresolved hostilities and fears that one partner or the other accesses in themselves, and maybe their partner resonates it in them, so they think, oh, you made me feel this. But when they refuse to own it, that hostility and fear then literally gets hooked up into our brain's image of our partner, and we start to dull the experience of the truth of who our partners are, because we refuse to clean up the mirror in our own minds. So this leads to, you know, that phase where the honeymoon is over. And when that stage begins, one either takes responsibility and realizes that all pain, I mean, other than a punch in the nose, is internally generated. Tools are needed. One needs to start to consciously create interdependent relationship in which each supports their partner in healing. The alternative is to resort to the childhood tactic of blame and fall into the generational power person and cultural dynamics of codependence. And that's a difficult trap to escape. But an important trap to escape. You'll notice if you've been through a particular painful reality, you've heard me say this 100 times, 87 different times to 42 different people, that you were the only one that was there every time. And many just never awaken to the fact or grow up enough and move out of the attack and accusation mode, the, you know, I'm going to be pissy with you because you said something I don't like and it's your fault I'm feeling this way. That person who plays that game ends up experiencing pain in their structures as a result of their denial and blame. And that mode tends to weaken and destroy relationship. People who never grow up to adult mode, who, when something of an irritating or painful nature comes up in them, stops and says, oh, this is mine, tends to want to find a way to dull the pain. And that's where cheating and abuse and eventually divorce happens. When that sad event occurs, it leaves the work of healing to the next shattered generation. And the next generation will, in the presence of those unconscious, insane dynamics, tend to shatter the minds and the awareness of that next generation. The inability to mature and take responsibility leads into language dominated by words like you made me, or you make me so mad, so sad, you make me afraid, embarrassed, whatever it is. And when your word patterns move in that direction, you know that your relationship is in trouble. And if you're the one that's using that language or that thinking, whether the language is ever spoken, it's internal, your physiology is in trouble. And notice the pain that will reflect in it until you stop lashing out. Even if you never use your tongue to lash out, but you do it just in your thoughts. Remember, thought energy is the energy that governs this whole system. The person who goes into hostility and fear literally shuts down. You know, the circulatory system of the body, so-called body, we generally hear about the arteries and the veins, but we hear very little about a thing called microcirculation. And microcirculation comprises about 70% of the blood vessels in the body. Depending whose numbers you take, somewhere between 10 and 40 billion blood vessels that if you stretch them out end to end would stretch out to a length of about 100,000 miles. That's a lot of circulatory vessels. And these are blood vessels that are smaller, well, about the tenth the width of a hair, the tenth the diameter of a hair. And you think about, well, let's go with the number 40 billion. You got 40 billion of these. And at the head of each of those vessels, which are the only way that blood, oxygen, nutrition gets into a cell, and the only way that wastes are retrieved from the cell, are removed from the cell. So these are called capillaries. They're just the tiny, tiny blood vessels. Arteries and veins don't deliver anything to the cell. They never make contact with the cell. But the arteries and veins deliver, well, actually, the arteries and arterioles and such deliver to the capillary, to the cell, then back to the veins so that the waste products of metabolism, carbon dioxide, acidic wastes, are handed off by the capillary to the veins, and then the veins return it to the heart to be circulated to the lungs, to be cleansed, and to be reoxygenated. So think about 40,000 blood vessels, and at the head of each blood vessel, there's a little thing called a capillary, precapillary sphincter, or a precapillary orifice. Just like there's a set of muscle fibers at the head of each of 40 billion capillaries in your structure, that, and those muscle fibers either are open and allow blood to flow into the cell, or closed and keep blood from flowing into the cell. Now we go into the fright and flight game of life. We go into fear, and hostility is usually a cover for fear. So if you go into hostility, what happens is, in order to survive, those blood vessels, those micro muscle fibers at the head of each capillary close up in order to protect, you know, if, generally speaking, where there's fear, there's attack. Where there's attack, there's a danger of damage. And if there's damage, there's a danger of blood loss. So these capillaries tend to just close up. These muscle fibers close up. And if one lives, as most people do in this culture, with repeated circumstances. I mean, they sit down and listen to the news. They sit, you know, get into a conversation with their spouses or their children, their bosses, their culture, their government, their politics, and they're in a chronic state of fear. These blood vessels are in a chronic state of being closed down. Now, think about that as you've got a river flowing through an area that's beautiful and pristine and clear and clean, and all of a sudden you get a couple of trees that fall. It'd be kind of like the muscle fibers closing up. A couple of trees that fall over the river, block it up, and all of a sudden, you know, the leaves and the grasses and the waste products that are coming down the river that normally would just be flushed through and the water would be clear, pristine, and oxygenated, all of a sudden starts to accumulate in all of the branches and the bark and such of the tree. And where you once had a flowing river, you now have a swamp. What happens with a swamp? Well, all kinds of organisms start to grow there. If you live in fear continuously, that's basically what these capillaries look like. And so when the blood vessels close due to fear, it's like the tree falling. And when that occurs, it's a great thing to have that happen if you are in an actual danger situation. You know, there's a lion coming through town, and, man, you can run quickly. You know, there's lots of blood supply. You don't need, you know, blood is cut off to all the things that cause your body to thrive, things like elimination, reproduction, skin temperature and such. All those things are ignored. The blood flow is cut off to those things, and the blood is reserved for the larger skeletal muscles, for the lungs, for the heart to pump faster, and the brain to keep us alert. And that's called survival. It's what they call a sympathetic dominant state. The nerves that control the structure in that state keep us in a sympathetic dominant state, which means protection. Can't be in protection and creation at the same time. It can't be in protection and thrive at the same time. And so when these muscle fibers close and the swamp starts to grow, the stench starts to grow, and that's when there's a food supply, just like the swamp out there, there's a food supply for all kinds of organisms that don't exist in nice, clean, clear, flowing water. Nice, clean, clear flowing blood through a capillary into a cell that delivers that fresh, oxygenated blood, oxygen, nutrition, takes wastes away. It's a great system. But when due to fear it shuts down, literally organisms that putrefy, blood begins to putrefy if it doesn't flow. And if it putrefies, then it creates a food supply for things like inflammation. And organisms that don't belong in the structure now, if that's the state somebody's in, somebody's going to come along and say, have we got a pill for you? We can kill off of all of those organisms. But the organisms aren't the problem. Fear, the anger, the rage, the shutdown of the flow, that is the problem. If you just come along and pour a poison on those organisms, well, you might get rid of the stench. So things seem to improve. But you haven't increased the flow. In fact, you've damaged the system through which the flow is supposed to occur by pouring the poison on it. And that's the problem. That's why, you know, we're at the point, if you listen to the specialists that study antibiotics, the poisons, they say that by 2050, more people will die in the world of antibiotic-resistant bugs than today are dying of cancer. Now, it seems like, gee, there's this infection going on. We got rid of it. Isn't that a great thing? No, it's not a great thing. Well, it's a great thing if you're the one with the infection and you stop suffering. But if you don't repair the damage, if you don't get the log out of the stream and allow the stream to flow again, you haven't done yourself a favor. You've just further damaged the whole system by putting a poison into the system. It's interesting, if you read some of the reports of the people, again, who study what's happening with antibiotic-resistant bugs, they'll tell you, well, and here we have a solution. We need to create stronger antibiotics. Just give us more money, and we'll create stronger antibiotics, and then we'll kill those nasty bugs. They don't tell you is what they know is if you kill the nasty bugs, you get still nastier bugs. And then if you kill the nastier bugs, you get nastier, nastier bugs, and the thing keeps degenerating. But the solution for those who are making money from those toxic substances, well, we just need to make them more toxic so we really kill all those bugs. But you can't kill all those bugs. They're called reducer organisms. They're designed to clean up the mess. And if you live in fear, in those micro blood vessels, you've got a mess. And you need to open those micro blood vessels. Now, handling your fear, engaging in forgiveness is key in the process. You've heard us talk before about a device called the Avicen. And what the avacyn does is it warms the blood. And when you pour warmed blood over constricted muscles, the constricted muscles relax. They start to open, and they allow that flow to happen. And so we see just all kinds of dis-ease processes disappearing as a result of people just putting their hands in a little device that warms their blood. What it does is it handles the cause level of that swamp. And as that warmed blood flows over those microvessels and they soften and they open and you get blood flow, the blood flow goes in and cleans out the acidic waste that have been accumulating, and the cell begins to function on higher levels. And when the cell functions on higher levels, it's able to start to process out. It's like literally like a physical form of forgiveness that occurs. And we're looking at the tool of forgiveness that allows us to change the mind energy within the structure. And, you know, when I first discovered this device and started to work with it, it's like, this is a physical form of forgiveness. And I've seen people with emotional issues that, you know, they've worked on for years, and they're still, once they're aroused, for days, they'll be lost in it. And over a short period of time, I've observed more than one person whose old chronic emotional issues just start to dissipate and disappear. It's like you've got the mental emotional form of forgiveness, the process from the first century Aramaic that removes the mind energy, and then this physical form of forgiveness allows and opens those capillary structures so that blood flows and flushes and washes and cleans out the gunk. So you see the complementary levels. And behind it all is depending on our relationships. If we're using relationships to escape ourselves, then what happens is people tend to bounce from relationship to relationship. And in truth, it's like there's nobody home. That becomes the story in relationship. And that becomes the norm. And people tend to function in hostility mode and relate to themselves and others as objects. All of a sudden, people aren't in relationships with beings, they're in relationships with bodies. I mean, look at how pervasive that is in our culture. If you've been objectified, if you objectify others, if you make people objects, and what happens with people who tend to live in denial and in dissociation in their relationships is that they have relationships not with beings, but with bodies. Being objects become disposable. How many people have lived that one out? When you finish with an object, what do you do with it? You throw it away. Part of the work of healing through relationships is awakening to the fact that you and the people around you are beings. And it's time for us to get out of the foolishness created by hostility and fear. I love one of the things Albert Einstein says. He says, anger is only found in the bosom of fools. If one maintains the awareness of themselves and moves into the awareness that others are beings and that we're in eternal relationships, then the opportunity phase of relationship begins. Now, the opportunity phase, if you've been living in that hostility and fear and blame game, playing the childhood, you know, and look what you did to me, those energetic patterns are not only going to have to be open physiologically, which we're talking about happens with the avacyn, but they're going to have to open mentally and emotionally. It's like they're complementary processes. You know, it's kind of like the idea of 1 + 1 doesn't equal 2, but it equals 3. If one's working on strictly the mental emotional level, great progress is done, but it's a long, slow process. If one's working simply on the physiological level, you know, people go out and do nutrition, they carry on with their old rages and fears and blames and objectifying themselves and others, and they don't make a lot of progress. When you start putting the two together, now you've got that synergistic aspect. Now 1 + 1 = 100. And that new relationship, that new phase, the opportunity phase, while it's not Dr. Feelgood, is where the real purpose of relationship starts to kick in, and it opens a space for deep internal resolution, healing, development, and growth. This is the space where unresolved pain, now, if you're enhancing the circulation on a physiological level with that physical forgiveness, there's going to tend to be an acceleration on all levels. So here is where unresolved pain, generational, parental, perhaps childhood issues are aroused. And the actions on the part of each partner will determine whether the sweet promise of relationship will be fulfilled or whether the drug of anger will ultimately destroy the relationship through codependence, where one, because of their denial, is unable to see that they brought all of the pain they will ever face in their relationship into the relationship with them. Carl Jung had a powerful way of saying it, and here's what he said. The little world of childhood, with its familiar surroundings, is a model of the greater world. The more intensively the family has stamped its character upon the child, the more it will tend to feel and see its earlier miniature world again in the bigger world of adult life. Naturally, this is not a conscious intellectual process. The aim of forgiveness is to dissolve all pain-based self-images. And deepening relationship vitalizes and accelerates healing as one chooses to stay connected to love. Now, sooner or later, if a real relationship is going to happen and healing through relationships is going to happen, everything unlike love brought into the relationship by both partners is going to have to be lovingly faced, embraced, and removed. And this process is accelerated when each person in the relationship realizes that it's not about loving or being loved by their partner, but that the age-old work of healing is the work of owning everything unlike love in ourselves and removing or forgiving, not each other, but those unwanted energies from deep within. In real relationships, these things can't be hidden. And as the required work of healing is done, the profound, sweet promise of relationship is fulfilled. The result is the only thing left is one's true creative nature, which is love. And what kind of things might people end up facing if they choose to truly step into a relationship and move through these things? Well, you've heard me quote it before, but in case you haven't been on the show when I have, there's a 17th century writer named Francois Fenelon. And he brilliantly describes the hidden work that each must, sooner or later, face and deal with. And it's, in a sense, it's kind of humorous when you listen to what he says, you know, the language he uses from 17th century. But in fact, he profoundly observes what the accumulated dramas and traumas are that most people need to deal with. And here's what he says. As the light increases, we see ourselves to be worse than we thought. We are amazed at our former blindness as we see issuing forth from the depths of our heart a whole swarm of shameful feelings, like filthy reptiles crawling from a hidden cave. We never could have believed that we had harbored such things, and we stand aghast as we watch them gradually appear. But while our faults diminish, the light by which we see them waxes brighter, and we're filled with horror. Bear in mind for your comfort that we only perceive our malady when the cure begins. So the average person lives in such a state of denial that they never allow the evidence of those states that are within, that we each carry within us, to come forward. It's kept locked away like, you know, a hidden demon of some kind. So this next phase of relationships is about awakening to the demons within, the energetic patterns of hostility or fear unresolved by previous generations, and then recognize that as the light comes, you're going to get to see those things. Now, in the ancient Aramaic language, the language in which the physicist, physiologist, psychologist, and geneticist, not the theologian Yeshua, who was mistakenly called Jesus, delivers his teachings. Remember that the word sin is an archery term, and it must be understood if we're to heal through our relationships. If you fired an arrow and missed the bullseye, the scorekeeper would shout sin, and simply meant off the mark. When we engage in energies not designed for humans who are created love, we quote-unquote sin. Again, we engage in energy that's off the mark, and we destroy the function of our own energy systems, you know, the energy system that we mistakenly call a body. In the ancient teachings, the phrase, the wages of sin is death, is nothing more than information about how people destroy themselves with energies that are not meant for them. And forgiveness has nothing to do with the Greek error that we need to let others off the hook for our internally generated repeating pain. To be healthy, we must overcome implanted energies that are off the mark, and forgiveness is the key. Remember that if you need a refresher on all of that, you're welcome to go to our website, and you can download free in any one of, I don't even know how many languages now, the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? So just go to whyagain.org, and you'll see on the homepage there's a picture of a book. Click on it and drill down, and you'll get to the page where you can just download a PDF of it to read. The book is out of print, so we can't sell you one, much as we'd like to. We can sell you a recorded copy of it if you'd like to listen to books. If you go to the catalog, you can download the book, or you can purchase the CDs of the book on being read to you. But otherwise, you can, and if you like a physical copy of a book, of course, you can print off what you print from the website, or you download from the website, or you can go to Amazon or eBay, and they usually have lots of inexpensive copies of the book. So our perceptions, the constructs of our minds, are usually reflective of errant thoughts, especially coming up in our faces when we're in relationship. A lot of people are like, well, I've given up on relationships. I don't want to be with those other people. And the reason they don't want to be with those other people is because they can't hide from themselves. Well, they do. But you'll notice the person who goes off and says, well, I'm going to become a hermit. You notice they get a little wacky and they start to do it. You can't escape dealing with what's in you. So perceptions are constructs that reflect too often errant thoughts that were modeled to us in childhood. And pain just signals that there's sin going on. Pain signals that there's an energy moving the system that does not belong in the system. And it's time to face and remove those things. Remember that you can go to your app store. You can do the worksheet on the website live. You can download the worksheets and print them so you can do them at home and write it yourself. You can also simply go to your app store and type in the words, whatever kind of telephone you have, type in the words Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, one word, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness, and you'll be looking at the world's only forgiveness app. You can do and track your forgiveness work right there on your phone. And as you remove that in you that reflects in your relationships that is unlike love, then you get to show up more and more as who you are. I think this is the point that was being made in that ancient scriptural passage. It says, as I become less, he becomes more. As my stunted, fear-based, generational, codependent self is forgiven, that is, as the components of it are removed, more and more the active presence of love moves into my physiology, and I get to live out of a true state of being. And that's what we're here to support. There's a beautiful statement that I love to post from a 13th century Sufi poet named Rumi, and here's what he says. Love is the cure. Your pain will give birth to more pain until your eyes exhale love as effortlessly as your body yields its scent. Love is the cure. Your pain will give birth to more pain until your eyes exhale love as effortlessly as your body yields its scent. So we're here to support you getting to that place. And when you're in a space where you can't touch into love, we're here to be the support that brings that love to your process. That's the whole idea of this community and this show. So we're honored and delighted that you're a part of it. And Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody out there in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No, it is quiet still. So,
if you're out there in listener land, you know, we just covered a pretty big chunk of information about healing through relationships. How can we support you? What's on your mind? Does that whole conversation make sense to you? If not, is there a component that needs some refinement? If I had given
have
this
a hand
presentation
up.
Oh, well, then let's just cut my conversation and go for the hand.
541, you're on the air. Celinda?
Yes, good morning, Celinda, yes.
Hey there, young lady.
Hello. A couple of things. One, Jeannie, do you mind putting the links to those two quotes for Jung's quotes and Einstein's quotes for me? I'd like to put them in my notebook.
Sure.
Can you put them on the, you know, on the site? That'd be great. I have phenolones. Thank you. The other thing is, Michael, I want to share with you that when I listen to your old audios, there's a big difference between your voice then on the old audios and CD and DVDs than your voice now. And my impression...
What difference do you notice?
I wanted to give you my impression, and that is your voice is lower in tone, and the feeling I get by listening to your voice now is that it is more relaxed, more open, not as tense, and... because it's something about the pitch, like when I listen to your old audios and videos of like 20, 30 years ago, it's very constricted, more tense. And what resonates in me is what I notice in moving inside of myself is that I get more restricted and tense. So I just want to uphold you and congratulate you that your voice is actually reflecting all of this work that you've done over all the years, because now I can listen to your voice and I don't get the same resonance within myself, which I think is delightful.
Sweet. Good feedback. I think, you know, I know that you're working with the commitment diligently at this point, and I think we've got copies on the website of, you know, the first person, the original commitment way back in the beginning. And that goes back 40 years ago of doing the healing through relationships work. And then if you look at the latest version of it, and, you know, go line by line, and you'll get to see every issue that I've gotten to face and had to deal with. You know, I mean, each time, basically how that commitment developed in the beginning was through what I was dealing with and how am I going to set up a personal code for myself that will take me into functioning as love instead of these old issues. And then through the years, each time that commitment has been edited, it's been as a result of something I've had to face in myself and in my life. and work through. And that's how the commitments become edited each time. So you get a look at some of the work that I've done in order to move into that softer, more relaxed place. Thank you for hearing it, and thank you for the feedback.
Well, you're so welcome and deserving, both of you. You do such hard work, and yet it must be your passion or you wouldn't be doing it for all these years. I love that. That's the only place
my passion.
To live, isn't it? Yeah, it is
it
the
is.
Only place to live.
Absolutely.
And the other thing I just thought of now is I really appreciate you and Jeannie with your insertion of all these quotes, because I always loved Einstein, but I didn't really realize the depth of him, because most of the common quotes, you know, haven't gone into the depth like this quote does today. And so I appreciate your giving his quotes and Jung's quotes, which I've always resonated with, and the fact that you put them in so I can go back and copy them without listening to the archive and, you know, refreshing it, and going back and back until I've got the quote written down. That's really very helpful. But I am a quote.
I understand.
For sure.
Well, so am I.
Those...
Well, you know, we get
it
to stand
like
on the shoulders of so many who...
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Go ahead and finish your thought, and then I'll finish mine.
Well, I was just going to say that, you know, as we listen to what people speak in language, we know where they've been, and we can benefit from the work that we've done if we've got the brain cells and the willingness to listen and be instructed. And so, you know, to me, there are so many people out there who've been doing their work at whatever level they've been doing it and achieving, you know, monumental results individually and collectively. And if we're willing to listen to their wisdom, we get to stand on their shoulders, you know. It's like, and, you know, my effort in the last 50 years has been to accumulate as much support for understanding this process as possible, so that every person who engages, instead of, as you say, having to go back and find it all and do it themselves, well, here's a compendium. Here's a place where you can start. You can stand not just on my shoulders, but the 10,000 people that I've interacted with and read and listened to. And, you know, we don't have to reinvent the wheel and do it all ourselves. So
that's such a nice feeling. And also the sense of the connection. It's sort of like it expands the family, and it expands the family in more than one generation. I mean, in more than, quote, unquote, the living, right? And so what happens is that it's like in The Way of Mastery, what Dr. Tim is sharing with us by reading The Way of Mastery. It says in there that if you just ask, Yeshua is speaking, and it says if you just ask, multitudinous beings will help you from all planes.
Yes.
And it's beautiful. It's like, oh, what is the solution of abandonment that I've been feeling all my life? You know, that I have cut myself off from these wonderful threads of wisdom and discernment and connection and the expression of how life actually is coming through other people's awarenesses, and not having to be perfect. It's like that's another thing The Way of Mastery says, is that do you think our growing stops because we've mastered it in a lifetime? We are also continuing to grow. It reminds me of I'm kind of on a roll here. I hope you don't mind. It reminds me of an expanded perception of the Creator itself. Like, it's like the never-ending story. It just goes
right from
mystery to mystery to mystery, from creative ahas to creative ahas. It's like microcosm and macrocosm, like we were talking the other day. And it just, so I'm probably ready for another test.
and I don't think that we've even scratched the surface yet. We haven't done much more than just scratched the surface.
So how could one get bored?
So,
yeah.
Oh,
could one ever
for sure.
Be bored?
I mean, for me, it's like there aren't enough hours in a day. If I could get into, 72 hours in a day, I could get three times as much research and understanding and work done. It's like I don't know how people can say, oh, there's nothing to do. It's like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah,
there's so
really.
Many aspects of the
question.
Energy field to study and to understand and do the work that those aspects of the field point to. It's just, and for me personally, the more I get exposed to, the more I understand that I know less than I thought I knew. So.
And it's like there's all these wonders out there. I mean, like there are all of these energy disciplines I would love to just work with. And yet life is saying, okay, you have to focus. You have to focus. Try one thing at a time. And so it's just, and how about going back and picking up this thread that you dropped 50 years ago, and explore it in a little more depth. And it's just like, I don't have to eat the whole enchilada because I can't even see the whole enchilada. I'm swimming in it.
I was actually driving the other day and contemplating, I put some energy into rewriting Why Is This Happening to Me Again. But originally when I wrote the book, I actually had a structure laid out where the book was going to be 12 books of 12 chapters each. And each page in the book was a chapter in two of the books in the Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And I was aligning it so that you could read, for instance, the first page of chapter 1, chapter 2, chapter 3, 4, 5, there were 12 pages and 12 chapters, so that if you read the first page of each chapter, together they constituted a topic in a book. If you read the second page in each chapter, chapter 1, chapter 2, 3, 4, through 12, that was a second topic that was addressed, and those 12 pages constituted a book, the third, the fourth, the fifth, and I got that structure up pretty close, and it just got to the point where I had to finish the book, so I ended up writing it as I ended up publishing it. But I was thinking the other day of it would be nice to go back and finish off that structure so that, you could read the book in two different directions. You can read, page 1 through 144, or you could read page 1, 12, 24, 36, 48, and direction you get a different meaning. So that was a project I've thought about reconstituting because it's a powerful way to build brain cells and see things differently.
Well, it's interesting. I keep thinking of the biblical thing about 12 times 12 and 144 and all of those mystical approaches to how important symbols are and how important numbers are and everything. And so there was so much metaphor that meaning that was put in these numbers and these symbols. So that's pretty interesting. So all these supposed concepts of perfection and the number 7, the number 9, the number 12, the number 3, the number 1, all of those. You can get down a rabbit hole during that, but it can also be a fun deepening of the intellectual process of the and when it's in connection, in aligned with the laws of life and the Christ mind and the Christ heart, it can be pretty powerful, I would think. Intellect maybe being used in its proper context, and all tongue in cheek,
sure.
Right, Mike? Michael, yeah, just like the humorous approach, such as the way a mastery says, don't take this so seriously. That's the main difficulty we have, is we're so serious about things, including
angels
our
fly. Angels fly because they take themselves lightly.
That's right.
There you
well,
go. So I join you in taking all lightly.
Yeah, I appreciate both of you. And do feel free to cut in if I'm being a little bird on the branches of a tree flitting from side to side. And any time I'm working on getting excited and then interrupting without honoring the other person being able to finish. So I'm working on that.
All right, young lady. And I join you in what I suspect is probably getting exciting in your world right now of getting your garden started. We're just kind of looking, we're talking today about getting our tomato seeds started and getting ready to get them out and moving in the direction of the garden. It looks like maybe we've hit our last frost point here, hopefully. The next 10-day forecast doesn't show us going below. The lowest is one day at 33 degrees, so maybe we've hit the end of it, and so we're going to get started with seeds and hope your garden goes well.
Well, it is exciting for two things, because in the last two or three days, the snow has gotten off the garden, and it was about almost a foot, anywhere from 8 inches to a foot deep last week. And the second thing is that, and the second thing is there are deer in the garden, and they're starting to pull things out. So we've got to get the deer-proof fence up as quickly as we can.
Right.
And Larry's a great engineer for that. He has managed that. We haven't had deer in our gardens before, but I'm gardening at a friend's house. I have a 720-square-foot garden, which is not very big, but it keeps me busy and off out of mischief. And then, so we've got to get that fence up, or I'm going to be very challenged to keep my equanimity while I'm watching all of my plants disappear.
Right, I hear that. Well, how is the weather? What are your temperatures running at night now?
A couple of days ago, we must have had under 20. We're probably a couple of zones colder than you.
I understand we were both in 6B.
No. We're 5, at least.
Ah, okay. So you're
and
okay.
Our challenge is that the West is undergoing a very severe drought. It's
right.
Getting critical, and people are still pumping groundwater out like there's no tomorrow. And I've collected several gardening articles on just a moment.
Leaves. Get leaves. Gather leaves. Wood chips.
Hold
moisture.
Off the beets. Yeah. I do mulching everything. But I have found some very good sources of books that have delved into indigenous gardening practices and how people in dry climates have helped. And also I have a lot of gardening books that can help me use water more wisely and still be able to grow my plants. Yeah. So anyway,
fabulous.
That's enough of that. But Bless those deer and help us keep them out without harming them.
There you go. All right. Well, you have a blessed one. Lots of love. All right.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. So, Miss Jeannie, we're down to about 6 minutes. So do we have anybody else out there with a hand up in the phone queue? Or?
No, we do not.
Well, then, we've got time for one more call, so let's see a hand go up. You know, with all that conversation we had about relationship and healing through relationship, if I were in your hometown and did that presentation on a platform out in front of your local church or your local library or your local university or prison, and you happen to be there listening, and I walk down off the stage, what would you come over and say, well, Michael, what about... What would your question be? The objective of this show is to provide answers to those questions. So if it were live and I were there and I was just stepping down off the stage and you were to walk over, what would you ask? And, you know, let's imagine we're there live. What would you ask? What would you be saying? And, you know, every question is key. And sometimes what appear to be some of the most basic questions are oftentimes some of the most important questions that take us back to the beginning. So if you're out there in listen land, what's on your mind? How can we support you? If you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening to the show. And if you push 1, that will raise a hand in the phone queue. Jeannie will introduce you by your area code. By the way, Jeannie, perhaps you could, if you haven't done it yet, drop a note to Blog Talk and see if there's any other way that caller can call in from Sweden. Peter seems like he can't get Skype to work, so. But maybe you could drop them a note and see if there's another way that he can get into the show and talk to us, because I know he wants to chat and has had trouble getting Skype to work. So how can we support you? What's on your mind? We invite you to keep a notebook. You know, if you're a regular listener to the show, keep a notebook with your questions so that when the opportunity's here, instead of, you know, filling time that isn't oriented toward what people really want to get into, push one and ask your question and keep us rocking on how can we support expanding the knowledge base for everybody. And as Jeannie said, on Sunday, 10 a.m. Eastern Time, we will be doing the Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing workshop. So if you'd like to join us and you're not part of that study as yet, if you've got my phone number or Jeannie's, you can call us, and or you can drop Jeannie an email and give us your name and number and we'll get back to you. It's janie@whyagain.org. Jeannie@whyagain.org. Drop her a note. Make sure to leave your phone number there, and I will get back to you. Beyond that, how can we serve you? We're down to about 2.5 minutes. And if we've got nobody with a hand in the phone queue, then I'm going to just say thank you for joining us. And everybody, create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world, and blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.